You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM and KBOO.FM online.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available at our website. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 4:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
There's something missing and I'm lit and I got something to say.
You're listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. My name is Emma, and I use she and her pronouns.
My name is Carter, and I use they, them.
My name is Misty, and I use they, them.
My name is Raven, and I use they, them.
Thank you. So tonight we have a really special panel on the intersection of trans and non-binary issues and disability. And disability rights. And our panel tonight is going to be hosted by Carter. Carter has been on the show twice, talking about their issues, what it's like to be someone who's both trans and disabled. And Carter put together the idea for this panel. So Carter, I'm going to hand it over to you.
Yeah, so I wanted to put together a panel to talk about how being trans and disabled, like living in a community where it can be hard finding medical help and connecting with other people who understand you, and like building relationships with friends, and how that could also affect like family relations, especially relations in the medical system and trust with doctors, nurses, all different staff, including people who work in the ER and other specialties. And I wanted to hear other people's experiences. So I wanted to talk about, for me, we've talked about my seizures and my experiences with emergency medical services and ER doctors, and I wanted to ask the other people here if they've experienced any bad experiences or good experiences that they have had with emergency medical services. So Misty and Raven, have you guys had any experiences with bad experiences with any type of medical professional, but specifically like an EMS or emergency services?
Well, yes. Okay. I was like, who should go first? Thankfully, not a whole lot of emergency room visits for me. I believe I've been using they, them pronouns and identifying as non-binary for probably like 4 years now. AFAB had a lot of problems with periods, and I actually had a positive experience at I think OHSU. I could kind of feel things welling up as I went into the Women's Center, or you know, it's called that, I believe, and you know, I have big shoes and I don't fit the woman stereotype.
Do you go to any of the gender clinics that OHSU has?
I started testosterone kind of through that program, but I haven't attended like meetings or anything. I eventually switched over to NUNM for primary care. They have some trans-friendly doctors that have experience. So I went with that. But the positive thing, I was talking about, I think I had them check an IUD because I was having a lot of pain, and it looked okay. And then they were gonna do an ultrasound, and I just kind of started crying. Like I just didn't want anything more in me. And the nursing assistant.
Are you talking about the transvaginal ultrasound?
At that point, I'm just identifying it as non-binary, and it was just kind of like a gyno appointment to see what was causing me pain.
Okay.
And she said, you know, you don't have to do this. You don't, you know, I can see
they were respecting your boundary that you had set.
Which I feel like I didn't even like verbally set. But she tuned in and said, hey, you know, you don't have to do this. Hysterectomy is an option for you. And I had never had anyone tell me, you know, that that's an option.
How old were you when this happened, and how old are you now?
I'm 42 now, so that was probably like 39.
Okay.
And I have been, you know, had been complaining about period stuff, and have had all kinds of medications and trial things probably since, I don't know, 21 or something.
I had went to the Legacy clinic that they have, and I had went in and I told the doctor I want a hysterectomy. How do we do that? And she was like, I can do it, and insurance requires two letters from therapists. And I was able to get it within the same year. And that was in March of 2020. So right as like COVID, like really like lockdown started, and so then I had to wait for all of the letters to get, but then I was able to get it in October of last year, and I had asked at 18 and I got it at 19, and I am currently 20. Raven, have you gone to any of the gender clinics at any of the hospitals? Have you gone to any of the gender clinics?
I have unfortunately not in person. I have emailed a couple of times back and forth with a clinic. I believe it was Legacy Good Sam, and got some information about gender affirming surgery, which is great.
That's where I went. Yeah, that's where I went for them. They're great because they can send referrals to anywhere. I believe, however, because it's Legacy, you have to have like Legacy insurance, which can also be a big barrier for other people, because what if they don't have insurance because they make just too much to get OHP, and so then like we're not able to get the care that we need.
Yeah, I would agree with that. They're also like, what I was also emailing about was just like possibilities for consultations and like if they had open appointments. And I emailed them several times just about like any appointments, and most of the time they were just booked up, like they just didn't have anything available. And I emailed back with them like probably for a few months. Like I would check in like every other month or so. And that was a bit frustrating for me. It was just like not really even being able to get a consultation because of the high demand.
Yeah, it sucks that primary care providers are not educated enough in transgender care, because we really shouldn't have to have these clinics specific to us. It's amazing that they are available, but yes, primary care providers should be trained in how to look for hormone levels and how to send referrals to surgeons if that's a route that someone wants to take.
Yeah, I agree.
I also agree. You shouldn't have to have a PCP specifically like trans friendly. All of them should be.
That'd exactly.
I feel it. Yeah, like at one point I was trying to get a therapist, and they had all of these options listed for like what kind of care you would like to receive, and trans friendly was one of the options, and I was just like, can they all just be trans friendly? That would be great.
Yeah. For me, my therapist was leaving, and they were an amazing therapist, and I really wish that I could have worked with them for longer. And before they left, they were like, I am going to find you someone that meets your needs. Because for me, I wanted someone who understood the complications that being disabled and being in the medical system that I have faced, not just with other therapists in the past that just said, do deep breathing exercises, you know, like count to 10 and breathe out. And that was not something that worked for me. And my first therapist kept saying that my seizures were just all in my head, and that if I learned how to deep breathe through a seizure, that the seizure would go away. And then I got connected with other therapists, and I was like, wow, just wow. And now I have a great therapist who is like specific for LGBTQ people, but also like understands the complications that being disabled I have faced through the medical system.
So important. I was lucky enough to have a trans masculine mental health therapist as I was thinking about and then starting low dose tea. And, you know, he had personal experience with tea and was able to, you know, helping me with things I didn't even know exactly how to ask. So that was awesome.
Missy, you said that you've been out for a few years, correct?
As non-binary, like, yeah.
Yeah. When you first came out, with like finding providers that like took you seriously because of the like physical problems that you have in the medical system, whether that be like any sort of specialty, but also mental health, did you find that coming out later in life, quote unquote, that maybe they took you seriously than if you were a younger person, or they didn't take you seriously? Did you find that there was any barrier in care because of your age?
Well, hard to tell, really. I think people are, I mean, I get she'd still. It's, you know, they, them pronouns, and non-binary is on all of my paperwork, and that still happens.
Do you think that maybe they took you seriously because you are like not you know, young, that you have had life experience and you're able to be like, I'm having heart problems, please fix my heart, instead of them being like, maybe it's just anxiety and you should go back to your therapist because of that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't feel like I've been questioned as far as like deciding to go on testosterone. It was actually suggested at one point to stop the periods by a provider I had at Hands-On Medicine, who is queer and, you know, just had other trans or non-binary clients. So I've had a pretty supportive experience overall, as far besides the messing up pronouns. But I have had a good deal of experience of just medical gaslighting in, like I have a pineal gland cyst, it's in the brain, and apparently 1 in 5 people have them, and they're small and don't cause symptoms, but there's a large group of people who they do cause symptoms for. And like, I'm having another surgery to smooth out hardware in the back of my head from an actual brain surgery that I had before. And one doctor's telling me, hey, you're not gonna like this, but you shouldn't have had that first surgery. You know, I don't believe your headaches and symptoms are due to that cyst. So it's interesting, it's not gendered, but I've definitely am in the middle kind of experiencing this gaslighting in the medical community for that specific issue.
Yeah. Raven, what about you? Like, do you think that providers see your age and any physical problems or mental problems that you could have? Do they gaslight you because you are having these problems and they're just like, well, maybe it could be because of your anxiety, or maybe you should lose some weight because that could be affecting your period? Do you get that a lot? Wow.
I have had so many fat phobic doctors that like I went in for an ear infection one time, and the guy, he wasn't my regular doctor. He was a doctor I'd never seen before, but I like needed to see somebody because I had an ear infection, and like he did like his exam and stuff, and he prescribed me some like medicine for it, and it ended up being fine. But like right as I was like getting my prescription and like my after visit summary, he was like, by the way, you probably wouldn't have as many ear problems if you lost some weight. And I was like, I don't know what that has to do with my ears. I don't get that. I don't understand it. So like,
he didn't even try to explain it.
Nothing.
I have a nurse case manager right now, and I will call her, and I'm like, I haven't been able to eat food and keep it down since October. I called her and I told her this. And she goes, well, have you tried eating a teaspoon of soup every 10 minutes? And I go, well, not every 10 minutes. Like, what am I supposed to say to that? Like, I see a nutritionist and I see these doctors, and just last week I had called a doctor, my GI doctor that I had, and I was like, I've been waiting a week for you guys to call me. And they go, oh, well, you should have gotten a letter in the mail that we're discharging you from all three clinics that we have. Even though I was seeing a provider at one clinic, all three clinics that we have, you are not allowed to see any providers at. And I go, okay, I want to talk to a supervisor. I've been calling a supervisor every day for the last week and no answers to why, other than your condition is complex. Which one? Which condition? Because I can give you a list of like seven. Can you pick one? Maybe the whole list. If you say, you know, your care is pretty complex for us, we don't think that we can take care of you, but here's a provider that we can refer you to that we think that can. It's very challenging when you have multiple different problems, or even just a simple problem, that like, I just need to call and be like, hey, I have, you know, a toe problem, please fix this toe problem. And they're like, well, if you were walking, you wouldn't have that problem. Thank you. I am in a wheelchair. I did not know that. Many EMS providers would scream at me, and several have dropped me because they wanted to see if I was faking. Yes, so when you have a seizure, there's a few different aspects of a seizure. There's an aura where you can feel it coming on. There is the ictal phase, which is the actual seizure, and the postictal phase. And in the postictal phase, your brain is scrambled like a tornado hit, and like there's a cow flying and a tire flying. It is not fun. And I cannot talk. Sometimes I can't even see or really hear or understand what's going on. And I've had EMS providers give me sticks of ammonia up my nose to try to wake me up, and I have no response until like 10 minutes later when the ammonia is still up my nose. And they would, like, them picking me up, as I said, they would drop me to see if I would catch myself. And I had to have many people fight for my care. And I was living at a transitional housing program. I was living at New Avenues for Youth. And the staff were just not trained in anything seizure or seizure related. And if you are working with homeless youth, you should be, like, it is an expectation on, like, from me to them, that you will know how to help anyone with a disability. And like, trying to get like me my medical care, like, these advocates need to help me. And my case manager was nowhere to be seen. I was just discharged from case management because I have too good of life skills, because I can advocate for myself. And let me tell you, advocating for yourself sucks, if you guys didn't know. I think that we can all agree, including Emma.
Can I tell a little story about that?
Yes.
So I had this fenestration surgery that go into the back of the head, the brain, and poke holes in the cyst that's kind of surrounding my pineal gland, right?
That kind of sounds cool.
I mean, yeah.
Medically, like, that kind of sounds cool.
Yeah, yeah. In some senses, it totally is. But it, you know, I was in the hospital for 4 days, and I basically don't feel healed. And it didn't really do much for my headaches besides relieve pressure, which could have been the lumbar puncture. And then the incision is like protruding in some places and kind of caving in others. And I have been like, I sent a letter to the patient advocate, I think the next month after I kind of stopped taking the opioids and trailed down on that. And she lost the letter or didn't respond. Like, she responded, hey, can I share this with your surgeon? And I responded, yes. And she just lost or just didn't follow up. And then I've followed up months and months later with like full letters with dates of all of the, you know, vertigo and bleeding from the incision and like all the stuff that's going on, and still nothing. Like, I've asked this person, you know, please tell me what your role is as a patient advocate so I can know what to expect, because I'm doing all the things myself. I'm calling my old surgeon in Arizona and trying to get appointments with them, and dealing with OHP and NUNM and back and forth and getting different answers, and mostly no's, and can't have a headache specialist because I'm on OHP. So in like one sense, OHP has like let me have this really, I mean, I think the surgery is probably in the $100,000 mark, which is wild to me. So in one sense, I'm so blessed to have access to that surgery. But in the other sense, you know, I can't see a headache specialist because of OHP. And I'm just trying to chase after care.
Were you able to see a specialist for the headaches?
No, I have not.
No, you still have not been able to.
Still have not. I've had that referral since 2018, since before surgery was even an option. And I have, you know, this next surgeon who's shaving down the hardware, taking it out of my head. He's telling me you shouldn't have got the original surgery, the fenestration, because he's one of the many doctors that believe pineal gland cysts aren't symptomatic.
And not everyone can change their type of insurance either, because with OHP, OHP has OHSU and Legacy and Kaiser and Providence, and not everyone can just switch from OHSU to Legacy because they have headache specialists, because then you have to have a whole new neurology team. If you like we were saying with just the transgender clinics, like we would have to switch from those providers too. When we have multiple providers, we can't just switch insurances because they won't take the other insurance.
Yeah, I might try to go to Legacy after this coming surgery, so have that covered and done and switch everything up. I don't want to, but I want to have a better quality of life and, you know, follow.
Yeah, and then like if you were to even if you were to switch to Legacy today, there could be 3 months to, who knows, 2 years of wait list to see specialists.
Yeah, they also had drug, like I had to try and fail some specific class of drugs.
Yeah.
I, you know, listed out a bunch and still no dice. So it's, I don't even really understand if it's OHP not, you know, being able to cover headache specialist, or I haven't taken and failed as many drugs, or what.
There are a few headache specialists at Legacy. I am connected with a couple myself because I have daily migraines that affect different parts of my head. So like, let's say I'm having a headache in the front, and I get that cleared up with like ibuprofen, like maybe that's all I need to do for that one. I will get a headache from the base of my head through my left eye. Sharp object stabbing through the back of my head. And then it's like, okay, cool. I get that one taken care of. Now I have all these others. And they also wanted me to try and fail many, many meds. And I was like, no. I've been on so many medications. I want to try the one that my doctor says this one should work. We shouldn't have to try and fail and try and fail, because that's just going to make like take up more money. Like that's all it is. It's going to take up money and it's going to take up time.
Not to mention possibly giving you other side effects.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Raven, do you have any other stories of like them not like getting you the care that you need, or you like had gotten the care, but just as we were talking, the doctors were like, no, we actually don't think that is quite right.
I think I do. When I was, I think I was 16. And I had to go to the emergency room because I had stayed awake. Like, I hadn't been able to sleep for, I think it was like 10 days or something like that. Like, I was having some real, like, what I thought was mania at the time, because I had been diagnosed with bipolar disorder and given a medication that was specifically for bipolar disorder. And then later on, I found out I was allergic to the medication, and I got like an all over body rash. And much, much later in my life, when I was like 22, that's when I actually got diagnosed with autism. And sometimes people with autism tend to stay awake sometimes when they're overstimulated. And I feel like when I went to that initial visit, they didn't really ask me any questions. They like stuck me in a glass room where they could like watch me and stuff. I saw a nurse and then I saw a doctor for like maybe 10 minutes, but it felt more like 5. They came back and they were like, we want you to try this medication. We believe you're bipolar. And I was like, all right, because I was 16. And, you know, I would say that doctors would be considered like an authoritative figure in some ways. Like, they're supposed to be the people that are taking care of you when you're not doing well. And I feel like that was really rushed. And the reason why it took me so long to get my autism diagnosis was because I had been misdiagnosed with bipolar disorder. And unfortunately for me, that diagnosis is still like part of my medical paperwork and stuff. Like, that's usually one of the things that any doctor or therapist or something, like if I'm there about like a mental health thing, they'll ask me like about the bipolar disorder, and I'll be like, that's still on there, because it's not a thing. Like, it turned out to be autism, guys.
Yeah, I have a similar story from this week. I had seen a new psychiatrist and we were going over medications. And since 2018, I have tried and failed 27.
Wow. I haven't counted all the medications I've tried, but I know that I've been on like at least 10 bipolar medications, probably like 4 antidepressants specifically, but like that's a separate subject.
Yeah, I have seen a few different psychiatrists and it's challenging because I don't quite fit in certain boxes that they would think I have a diagnosis. But from my providers that I currently have, I have a pain psychologist, I have a normal psychologist I see, as well as a therapist that I see. And I had seen this new psychiatrist and I was like, you know, I'm still willing to try medication. And I'm in like her after visit summary notes, because I read all of the notes that doctors write to make sure that the right information is in there. And if it's not, I like to bring it up to them immediately over my health message, or I call the office. And one of the things that she wrote was has a history of borderline personality disorder. And I told that to my other providers and they just looked at me and I was like, right? I don't know where that came from, because I don't have borderline personality disorder. And somewhere in my medical history, apparently there is that diagnosis that like I was not made aware. And it is frustrating how they're just like, we're gonna take this diagnosis from 7 years ago that is incorrect, but because it's in your medical file, we have to include it.
Hi, this is Emma. I just wanted to, I'm sorry to interrupt. I really am trying to stay out of the conversation as much as I can, but this is a really good point you're bringing up, Carter. And I'm just wondering if each of you might be willing to talk about how you think, if you think that you are being misdiagnosed or being given medication as a way of treating what they perceive as gender dysphoria.
I think you just brought up a good point, because a lot of symptoms of gender dysphoria, there is a anxiety portion about how you are perceived and how you feel perceived. There can be that depression of you don't feel the way that your body looks. That is a good point, because with gender dysphoria, how are we supposed to correct it? There is, you know, that can be something that someone has for their whole life, and some people do find that surgeries or hormones can help it. I definitely think that for me, I have been able to get the level of care regarding my transition earlier in life, even though that I had to wait until I was 18 to access this care. But the symptoms that I face definitely are from a traumatic past, as well as the trauma that I face continuously in this medical system that we have. What about you guys?
I definitely think that I feel like when I go certain places, I might possibly, like, I probably look queer, and When I go to the doctor's office, I have noticed a difference in my level of care when I am not particularly dressing more feminine. Like if I'm dressing like androgynous, or I'm feeling more masked that day, like I feel that my conversations with my doctors that when I dress more androgynous are they're short, you know, they're shorter. It seems like they're just trying to like get me out of there and not really paying attention to what I have to say. But if I go in like dressed femininely, I'm a little bit more listened to, but at the same time, you know, if it's a male doctor, like I have like a 50-50 shot of actually being listened to. If it's a female doctor, I usually 100% will be listened to and respected. But even then, like I usually feel the need to dress more femininely when I go to the doctor at all, just so the doctors will like have that conversation with me about what's actually going on.
Yeah.
I was just looking to see, and I do have gender dysphoria on my health, my chart, like health plan diagnoses. And it was added the day of my surgery for the brain thing, but that's interesting because.
Yeah, I would say it's interesting on how the diagnosis goes. So for me, they can use for like the code, like the billing code that I have gender dysphoria, but in my problems list, it lists transgender as a problem.
Right.
And I'm like, being transgender is not a problem. It's definitely interesting how doctors want to like to put it in the chart.
It's so weird. I've seen I go over health records, and some places they'll still have she, and in some places they'll they and she. I had a pre-op appointment that had to do with like making sure I was good for anesthesia today, and the person asked if I was transitioning as we were going over my medications, and I was like, well, I'm non-binary and I'm taking testosterone, like I don't know.
I had an experience with a doctor, and I was having really bad stomach problems, and I get frequent UTIs as well as just normal GI problems. And the doctor leaves, and he comes back, and he's standing, and he goes, so I know this can be a little bit embarrassing, but I think I have to do a prostate exam. And I bust out laughing. And I go, I don't think you'll find it. I was born female. And like, he stood against the wall and like had to use the wall to help him sit down. And like, this was before I had top surgery. This was before I had any surgery, I had just started hormones. So like my voice didn't really drop much, didn't really have facial hair. And I couldn't hold the laughter in.
I hope they had a good sense of humor about it too.
He was like, I'm so sorry. And I'm just laughing. it's a funny story to tell, but it is. I read the chart. If you talk to anyone who works here, that like any of the medical assistants, they would have told you, don't do that.
One thing I do want to touch on that a client told me that I feel like is helpful for folks who may not be getting the kind of care that they deserve is if you ask for a test or procedure or help on something and they want to deny you that service, you ask them to note that down in your chart.
I heard about that too.
I started having doctors do that. Or what you say is, what are all of the problems that you think that could be causing this symptom? What do you think that could, everything that you have come up with, why do you think it's anxiety and not a heart attack, right? Like, why do you think it's not these problems? And, or I go, I have a history of this problem, such as my UTIs. I say, I have a history of UTIs and I would like to get tested for a UTI, and that they will, and I don't say it in a, well, I think I kind of need to be tested. I say it very, very flat, very just, assertive. I need this test done. And if they don't, and if they don't do it, or they just think, well, maybe if you just like drink more water, because that has happened to me, where I will call my office with my case manager and I'm like, I'm having this problem, and they're like, well, drink more water and see if it goes away.
I had a UTI that turned into a kidney infection for like, I think like similar reasons. Like somebody was in my life was telling me like, it's probably not as bad as you think it is. Just drink some water.
Yeah, so there was an advocate, a SMRC advocate that I had met. Their name is Dee Dee Willis. And when I was 17, I went to SMRC on my birthday, the day that I turned 17. And that was the first face that I had seen. And Dee Dee had fought so hard for me to get care. Anytime I had a seizure and paramedics would be called at SMRC, they would be there saying, this is Carter, these are their pronouns, this is what's going on. And Dee Dee helped me get housing and then fought for me to get a mattress pad on my floor, so that if I had a seizure and I rolled onto the floor, I wouldn't hit my head and I wouldn't get any injuries from that. And I would not be the advocate that I am for myself and other people if they did not help me. They were such an amazing person.
Raven, Misty, have you had people that have been strong advocates for you while you've received services?
I have not, unfortunately. Like, I wish I had had somebody who was like able to step in and say what I need sometimes. But for the most part, I like, if I need something, I pretty much have to figure it out. But like, I feel for you, Carter, and I am really, if you ever need anything or you want to talk about Dee Dee or anything, like, you can always message me or call me.
I'll share a little memory about Dee Dee if I could as well. Yeah. I met them for the first time at a goth float, like a goth river float, which was...
not surprise me.
Which was an awesome event itself. And I just really loved the way Dee Dee announced their pronouns and asked other people what their pronouns were, even if it may have been obvious to other folks, to just kind of normalize asking about pronouns. And I knew of their work with Smirk, and super glad to hear that they were there for you. Other people, I had a friend come with me to an appointment recently where I had written down questions to ask about this upcoming surgery, and she kind of helped me stay on track a bit and offered to marry me so I can get on her insurance. So, we're just besties. I think that she's moving to Mexico soon, so it probably wouldn't do as much good, but that was about the sweetest thing I've had a friend offer.
I know for a fact that if I did not have Dee Dee in my life, I would not have gotten the transitional housing that I had for 6 months. I have a feeling that because of my seizures that they would have not let me go in to transitional housing because I was too complex for their need, for the way that they were able to help people. And I now have my own apartment. I am on disability, and while I am not just surviving, I am doing way more than what I would have thought I would have been in 2019. I definitely did not see where I am now when I started having seizures, and when I was looking for a caregiver, they reached out to me and they said that they would be my caregiver for me. And there was some stuff that had fallen through, but they said that if I ever needed anything, that I could text them and call them. And they were such a sweet.
True story. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah.
I know my cats are purring.
Well, Carter, we have about 5 minutes left in the show. Is there anything that your panel, you and your guests have not touched on yet that you'd like to get to?
I actually wanted to ask you, after hearing our experiences, what do you, as someone who is not disabled, think that you can, that you've learned, that you think that could help you make a difference in other people's lives, not necessarily just like accessing healthcare or stuff like that, but like if you had any disabled friends in your life, do you think that you'd respond differently to situations if they were to come to you saying, I need help with this? Do you think that you could help me?
Yeah, I mean, so the first thing that I've really noticed tonight that I need to really remember is that when I meet people on the street or in different kinds of settings, at trans events or queer events, or just out in public, not to make assumptions about what their level of ability is. I mean, just in listening to the three of you talk really confidentially, but in this very open way with each other, it's really helped me to see how people have complex set of circumstances that create a framework around how they interact with the public at large. And it's really good to just not assume that just because I'm physically able to do different kinds of things that like the people around me are, or that people around me are neurotypical and that I should just interact with them as if they're neurotypical. So you just listening tonight has really reminded me that I need to, in addition to not just making assumptions about people's gender, also not making assumptions about what their level of ability is, and to really get to know them, to ask them questions, and to, you know, really seek out information before engaging with them, so that I don't just assume that they can do something or that they can't do something.
That's awesome. I'm so glad that we were able to talk about this openly and that you learned something new. Because for me, I'm 20. I'm like, what am I supposed to do with like the rest of my life? Because for me, I never thought that I would, one, be disabled. You can become disabled like that, like a snap. You can become disabled at any moment in your life. And I never thought that I would, one, be disabled and be advocating for disabled rights, because disabled is not a bad word. And being disabled, and, you know, acknowledging the different things that you can and can't do is really important. And acknowledging the stuff that you can't do is also important. Knowing your limits is very, very important, such as sensory needs. If you need to wear sunglasses in a grocery store, wear sunglasses in a grocery store. There's nothing wrong with that.
I appreciate that comment on a deep level.
So we've been talking tonight with Carter Lee, Raven Roosh, and Misty F. Would you all like to make closing comments? Is there anything that you'd like to share to kind of close out the show?
Cuddle with your cats.
And or pit bulls. Thanks for making this happen.
Thanks for inviting me. I had a really great time tonight. This was a great discussion.
I am so happy y'all did this. And thank you so much, Emma, for letting me use your platform to spread awareness.
Oh, thanks. This isn't my platform, though. This is KBOO. It's actually community-powered radio. So, you know, if you want to become a regular co-host on the show, Carter, I would really love to have you be part of the collective.
I'm not crying.
So tonight's show is dedicated to the memory of Dee Dee from Smirk. If people want to find out more about Smirk and the work that they do, there's lots of information online. And are there places where, Carter, where people can go to learn more about disability rights and about gender non-binary folks?
There's a few resources. I would say that Smirk's drop-in center and Smirk's platform on Instagram is probably the best way to access information, because they can give way more referrals to all of these different places, including help with gender-affirming surgeries, or if you need any legal help because you face discrimination or need help with accessing SSI or SSDI.
Great. Well, thank you so much. Thank you all of you for joining us tonight. You've been listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. Good night. Bedroom surprise.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO radio station is located in Portland, Oregon, in Multnomah County. We honor the indigenous people whose traditional and ancestral homelands we stand on, the Multnomah, Kathlamet, Clackamas, Tumwater, Watlala, bands of the Chinook, the Tualatin, Kalapuya, and many other indigenous nations of the Willamette and Columbia River regions. It is important to acknowledge the ancestors of this land and to recognize that we are here because of the sacrifices forced upon them. In remembering these communities, we honor their legacy, their lives, and their descendants with the forming of relationship to each other and the living world. We establish and support